Judah and Tamar, and we're back on the life of Joseph. And Joseph picks up in verse 39 and just kind of leaves off right where we started. You know, I mean, it just starts right where we left off back a chapter ago. And it says, and Joseph was brought down to Egypt, and Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, captain of the guard, an Egyptian, bought him of the hands of the Ishmaelites, which had brought him down thither. What we find here is Joseph and all of this, you remember what happened. His brothers, some of them wanted to kill him. And there was, you know, the whole incident where they decided, well, let's just go ahead and sell him. We'll tell Dad that we killed him, you know. And so they took the robe back all bloodied up so that he thought they were dead. But Jacob would think he was dead. And yet he had been sold into slavery. And we talked about all of that, all right? And so this is just a confirmation that all of that went down, all of that took place. And so he sold into the house in Egypt to Potiphar. But now let me back up just for a second, just to remind you, in case you think that there is a contradiction here. Back in chapter 37 and verse 36, when they tell you what took place there, and then here in chapter 39, they confirm that it actually took place. There are some that's going to tell you, see, the Bible's full of contradictions. And he tells you back there, he says, and the Midianites sold him into Egypt unto Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh and captain of the guard. But here we find that the Ishmaelites are the ones that did that. If you remember, those of you that were present when we talked about this back in chapter 37, if you remember, they were there and they see the Ishmaelites coming by. And then they said they also saw the Midianites, and the Midianites were merchants. And so what we find is the Midianites were more familiar with the buying and the selling. And it seems like, at least to me, because it doesn't mention that with the Ishmaelites, it makes a point of making sure you understand they're the merchants. It sounds like the Ishmaelites did the actual buying, but the Midianites kind of negotiated the deal. And that's what it looks like here, is they're saying, hey, look, yeah, let me show you how to do this. Let me help you negotiate this deal. And in all likelihood, when they got to Egypt, they're all going to the same place. They get to Egypt. The Ishmaelites actually own Joseph at this point, but the Midianites seem to negotiate the deal. And so it makes it a little easier to understand when you're looking at it from that term, so that you realize, you know, they're like the middlemen. It's kind of like, you know, we can talk about when we're buying a house, you know, you can talk about the real estate agency and you could say, yeah, they helped them buy the house. And if I were to say, yeah, you know, I bought my house from, I probably, you know, don't even know the name of the people I bought them from. And I may even say I bought it from that particular real estate just because they're the ones that had it for sale. It's kind of that same concept. You have that middleman and yet, you know, you're actually purchasing it from someone else, but they're the ones doing the selling. Mm-hmm. All right. So it's just the way that kind of works. And so the Midianites, in all likelihood, were the ones that negotiated the deal on both ends. But it was the Ishmaelites that were actually putting up the money, if you would. All right. So this is the deal makers, and this is what's going on. And then in verse 2 is an interesting statement to me, because he says, and the Lord was with Joseph, and he was a prosperous man. He was in the house of his master, the Egyptian. Now, an interesting thing here. Talking about him being a prosperous man, I guess it would be in terms of whoever you're talking to. Because in terms of Joseph, I would think that if you're talking to Joseph, he'd probably be looking at this situation going, are you serious? You know, I lived in the house with my brothers, and they hated me so bad they wanted to kill me. But instead of killing me, they negotiated with the Ishmaelites and wound up selling me into slavery. All right, who are they to sell me? All right, but nonetheless, they sold me into slavery, and now here I am in Egypt being sold again to this guy, and I'm a slave. I'm nothing like what I once was. And on top of all of this, they took, you know, my brothers, the people that's supposed to love me. Dead, so I can assure you there's nobody out here looking for me. All right, as far as they're concerned, I'm dead and gone. There's nobody looking for me. I'm forevermore here in Egypt. I'm sold into slavery. What am I going to do? So from his perspective, I would have to think that he's got to be looking at this situation and going, prosperous? You know, the Lord's with me? And he has to be questioning some of this. Now, I got to tell you, have you ever been in a situation, maybe not to this degree, but have you ever been in a situation, or maybe you're in one right now, for all I know, that you're dealing with some things and you're looking at that and you're going, you know what, I know God's made me some promises. I know what God can do. I know he's a great God and I know he loves me, but this situation is tough. And you know what? Sometimes when you're in that place, it makes it a really difficult thing. And I would imagine Joseph is really struggling at this point because he's looking at his life and he's going, you know, I don't see the Lord being with me right now. I'm struggling with this. Now, I'm not trying to put words in Joseph's mouth, and I'm not trying to make that up, and I'm not trying to make it out to be that, because Joseph proves himself to be a very godly individual. But you got to think that he's feeling pretty beat up right now. And when you're looking at this, we also find this, because from the outside looking in, because what we find is Potiphar is looking at him and going, hey, man, the Lord is with him and he prospers everything he does. From the outside looking in, you know, he may be struggling, but the people that see him in this situation are going, here's God's man. This guy is who God would have him to be. And this guy, it seems like everything he touches turns to gold. You know, I've been in situations before, and you've probably been in them, maybe, like I said, you may be going through it now, where in your own heart, you're thinking, man, I'm struggling like I've never struggled before. This has got to be the most difficult thing that ever took place in my life. These things are going on, and I'm really having a hard time finding God in all of this. You know he's there because you have promises, and you know he's there because you believe his word, and you know he's there because you trust him, but man, you're just struggling to find him. But people on the outside looking in are going, man, you are a godly individual. It amazes me at how you're dealing with these things, and it still seems like everything you do just works right. And you're not seeing it, but trust me, a lot of times when we're faithful, we're right where God would have us to be, there are people watching you, and people see who you are, and people get an entirely different perspective. I'll just give you an example in my own life. When we were going through all that with Chris, with my son, I never felt so defeated in my entire life, because, you know, you feel so helpless. It's like, I can't fix this. I can't do anything. And it's like, there's nowhere for me to turn. I couldn't fix the situation. And in my own mind, I was like, okay, but God, I trust you. I know you're a great God and I know what you can do, but man, oh man, where are you in all of this? Because I know what you can do. Why aren't you doing it? And then I have people coming to me going, man, you amaze me. And I'm thinking, I'm not amazing me very much. You know, I'm glad I'm at least amazing somebody, but it's not me. And what we see here in the life of Joseph, I think, is a similar thing. His life just seems to be falling apart. He's losing everything he once knew, losing everything he loved, everything he cared for. And yet Potiphar says, man, God is surely blessing you. It amazes me at how much God is blessing you. And that just, sometimes when you look at this thing, I can't tell you the number of people that, you know, maybe it was through our newspaper articles or whatever, they came to know Christ through all the struggles that we went through, people I didn't even know, and they're looking at our life going, you guys are amazing. And it amazes me at how much God is blessing your family. And I'm looking at the whole thing going, well, really? But when I look back at it now, which is what Joseph will do chapters down the road, I look back at it now, I see those blessings that other people could see that I couldn't see. Because I look back now and I think, you know what, this had to happen for that to happen, and this had to happen for that to happen, and this had to happen for that to happen. You know, and it becomes an amazing thing. I'll share one little story with you in all of that I've shared before. Most of you probably have heard. But after Chris had passed away, difficult time, obviously, emotionally and all that kind of thing. And one of the people from my church asked me to go visit someone in Children's Hospital. Now, back at that time, you could still go visit without all the stuff you go through now. I mean, it's changed. The security has changed from then. But they asked if I'd go visit someone. I said, well, can you go with me, because they're not going to know me. Oh, no, I don't want them to know that I sent you. I'm like, seriously? I don't like that stuff. I'll just tell you now, I really don't like that stuff. Well, it's my lawyer's brother's daughter. I said, seriously. I don't want to do this. No, I'm serious. If you would go, I'm just telling you, I just think it would just, they need it bad. bad. They need someone that's been there, and they need someone that has a godly perspective on all of this because they just feel so defeated. I'm like, you've got to be kidding. You don't even know these people. It's your lawyer's brother's daughter. You don't even know them. And you want me to go there, and I'm not allowed to tell them who sent me. I'm not going. And she's like, please go. Okay, I'll go. I don't know what possessed me to go, but I'll go. So I go. Lo and behold, this little girl is on the same floor as the floor that my son passed away on. I think, oh, this is a struggle. And I stood in the little foyer. There's this little foyer. And I'm standing there. And the lady at the desk, she goes, are you okay? I said, I'm fine. I've got to go see someone, and I need to build up for it. Because I don't want to just go in there and break down. So, you know, I kind of gained my composure. And I go in. Lo and behold, I didn't remember the number, but she's in the same room my son died in. I'm like, oh, my goodness. How am I going to do this? And so I thought, okay, just suck it up, Barry. Just do it. Just get in there and do what you got to do. So I go in. I say, hey, how you doing? And I don't know anybody sitting there. I said, you don't know me. I said, but someone asked me to stop by and see you. I said, I'm their pastor. And they, oh, okay. And you could tell it's real awkward. This is our pastor. I'm like, okay. Their pastor's already here. I feel like I'm really horning in on a situation, like I'm butting in. And I just, you know, fumbled through a few things and got out. You know what I'm saying? I just fumbled through whatever I could fumble through and got out. And I know they were talking about me. I'm thinking, this was the stupidest trip. Why did I agree to do this? This has been miserable. So I get out of there. And I go and I'm standing at the elevator thinking, oh, this was so stupid. This was so stupid. Why did I even come down here? And this little lady taps me on the arm. And I look over. I said, yeah, can I help you? She goes, you're Chris Wilson's dad. I said, well, yes, I am. She says, you don't know me, do you? I said, I'm sorry, I really. She reminds me, now that I look back at it, she kind of reminds me of Dee. I mean, she looked a lot like Dee. She goes, you don't know me. I said, no, I just can't remember you. She says, well, let me tell you who I am and you'll remember. I said, okay. She said, you remember the little paper with your son's handprints on it? I said, I sure do. She says, I was an activities director there and I'm the one that did that little handprint with him. I said, I remember you doing that. Now that you mention, I remember that being done. She goes, we did that just before you made the decision to take him off the ventilator. I said, wow, I remember that now, you know. She says, and I got to tell you what you did to me. And I said, what did we do to you? She says, I was in there doing the handprint when you made that decision, and you decided to have prayer with your son before all that took place. And I mean, keep in mind, this is one of the most defeated times of my life anyway. And I said, yeah, I remember. And she says, you had about 30 or 40 people crowd into that little room and pray with your son before you took that ventilator out. And I said, we did. And she says, I couldn't believe it. She says, I was stuck back in the corner. I couldn't get out. She says, there was nowhere for me to go. She says, and I got to tell you, I wanted nothing to do with what was taking place, and I didn't want to be there. She says, I'll just tell you, I wasn't a godly individual whatsoever. I didn't want nothing to do with it. I didn't want anything to do with being there. But she said, I had nowhere to go, so I had to. And she says, I have never, ever been in a situation where I felt God's presence like I did in that room. And she said, you prayed for your son. She says, first, I couldn't imagine how you could even do that. And she said, your prayer was amazing. She said, it just spoke to my heart. She said, I wanted so bad to talk to you because I just knew that that was so real. And she says, I knew it. But she said, it wasn't the right time, and I knew it wasn't the right time. But she says, here's what I did. She said, I went to a church. She didn't tell me which church, what kind of church. She said, I went to church that Sunday, and I asked Jesus Christ into my life. She said, I was saved because of what took place in that room that day. Here I am. And on this particular day, really defeated because I'm thinking, why am I here? God's put me through an awful lot. I mean, I'm having to go to the very room where my son died and deal with people I don't even know that don't particularly want me there. And it felt really awkward. The whole thing just seemed a mess. And then all of a sudden, God said, Barry, it wasn't a mess. I brought you down here for one reason. You needed to hear this. And I got to tell you, it brought me from that place of being defeated to that place where I felt like God had really done something in my life. Amen. Joseph is in a place where he has to feel defeated. He has to feel beaten down. He has to feel like, you know, nobody loves me. My family's turned their back on me and everything's a mess. And then suddenly he gets this little nudge from God through the person of Potiphar, who says, everything you touch prospers. Everything you touch turns to gold because you're a man of God and God's with you. And Potiphar so sees that he takes Joseph and brings him up into a place. Now keep in mind, the Egyptians would never do this with, especially the Jews, because, well, they weren't even, you know, they weren't even called Jews then, but I'm just saying, the Israelites, because they were nobody at this point. They don't even have a land, they don't have a people, they're basically a family. And he takes this guy and brings him in and makes him literally the ruler of his household. Trust him with all of his finances, trust him with all of his fields, his house, trust him with everything he has, because he said, I see something in you that I don't see in anybody else. Elevates him above all his other Egyptian leaders. He answers to no one in Potiphar's house but Potiphar. And even Potiphar says, I've trusted you with everything. I just come and eat and leave. I trust you with everything I own. That's what he did. That's what God did with Joseph in this particular situation. Now, I say all of that because when we get in those positions where we seem like we're so beaten down and we just don't know which way to go and we don't know what to do and we feel like everything is collapsing around us and we just feel like we've been beaten, understand that God hasn't forsaken you. God hasn't just pushed you aside. God still loves you. God's got a plan for you. And if you could just somehow or another get to the end of the road and look back, you'd be able to see that God's got something really good in store and that God's going to bring you to this place that's so much better. And that's hard to imagine, and it's hard to see when you're in the thick of it. It's not till you get down the road and you're able to look back and say, oh, now I get it. Now I understand. Now I see. Doesn't make it any easier during that time. But man, I got to tell you, it helps you to realize not to feel forsaken, not to feel forgotten, but to know that God's still got his hand on me and God's still watching for me. Isn't it difficult sometimes, even with your own children, when you have to let them learn lessons that you know what's best for them, you know what you have to do. I remember just simple things, riding a bike. I remember taking my kids out there and saying, okay, today's the day. Today's the day the training wheels are coming off. And they're like, oh, seriously, I don't think I can do this. Oh, no, I don't think I can do this. Today's the day. They're coming off today. We'll go out to the park, ride a little bit with the training wheels on. We'll move them up a little bit to where they don't touch much, let you ride around. Then we're going to take them off. Today's the day. And like, oh, man. And you know when you take those things off, you're in for some bruises, some bumps, some scrapes. You know it going in. And it's like, oh, man, I dread this because I hate seeing my kids get hurt. I hate seeing them fall down. I hate all that kind of stuff. But we can see down the end of the road that they can't see. And they're like, oh, I really have to do this. Get back on that bike. Go, come on. Get back on the bike. I don't want to do this anymore. Yes, you do. Get on the bike. That's who we are because we know that they have to keep on getting on that bike. As miserable and as difficult as it is. Folks, when we're in that beaten down place, we're in that miserable place, understand and know we can't just quit. We can't just throw in the towel. We can't just say, okay, I'm done. I don't trust God anymore. I'm done with God. We can't. None of that can happen. Because we need to realize that God hasn't forsaken us. And sometimes there are things we have to go through and things that have to happen in order for us to grow strong and in order for us to be ready for the things that lie ahead. Not only that, but in the midst of all of those kinds of things, we have to show ourselves faithful in all the small things. I mean, here's Joseph. He hasn't yet been elevated to a position. Potiphar's seen him. He's going to make him the head of the household. But it doesn't tell us how much time has elapsed here. And we don't know where how Potiphar determined he was prosperous. He had to have started him, I'm sure, at the very lowest point. So, oh, man, this guy's God's blessing him better than that, and moved him to this, and moved him to that, and moved him to that. And eventually he became the head of the household. And so I'm sure that we don't see everything here, but there had to be things where Joseph was just faithful to do all the small things that allowed God to move him to here, and to move him there, and to move him there. You know, and I'm sure you can see those things even in your own life. We have to be faithful to do those small things right in order for God to step us up to those next things. Butch, I've shared this story with other folks, and you know, you don't get the privilege of hearing all the stuff I talk about with you, but, you know. But Butch is one that got me out first doing the door-to-door visitation. And I remember those first times going out, you know, praying that nobody would answer the door. You know? It'd be like, okay, you've been out enough now. You should be able to go out on your own. Are you serious? Yeah, I'm going to send them with you so you can train them. What are you talking about? You know, I don't even know myself, and you want me to train them? And you're walking up to the door. So now, this is what you do. You go like this, and you pray like the Dickens that nobody's going to answer. You know? That's the way I felt. So, you know, but what we have to do is stay faithful. And stay strong and let God work with us and build us and grow, cause us to grow and do all the things we need to do. So we have to be really faithful in those small things. If we're not faithful in those small things, God's not going to move us to the next step. We have to be faithful here so he can move us there, and faithful there so he can move us there. Joseph was faithful in everything he did, and because of that, God caused it to prosper. You know? And if we're just faithful with those things, God will use us. I remember when I started teaching Sunday school. I knew so little, really. Took a class of about 7. We wound up getting plenty big enough that we wound up having to split because we didn't have a room big enough for it. And so we had to split the class. Well, it wasn't because I was a great teacher. I wasn't. But it was one of those deals where I was faithful to say, okay, God, I'll do it. I'll do that, and I'll do this. And there was a time there where I didn't think I was going to make it. I mean, I was being torn, you know, and it was a struggle because I was working, you know, and I bought some tires from a guy at the church and couldn't afford them, so he let me work for him at nights, about three nights a week, and pulled the third shifter, you know, at his gas station to pay for my tires. And I was trying to get some schooling in. I was taking a handful of classes, trying to get that in, you know. And then I was trying my best to be as faithful to church as I could. I was teaching a Sunday school class. I was a Sunday school director, and I was doing one of the buses. And I think I might have been the janitor. I'm not sure, but it was like, man. And I was trying to be faithful to visitation, and man, there were times where I thought, God, I can't do anymore. But when I look back, I see all of that as preparation for what God had in store for me. When we look at the life of Joseph, I think much of what we see is to prepare him for the place where he needed to be. To prepare him and move him up, because God had great plans for Joseph. But Joseph had to be faithful in those things and had to do all those things that God had called him to do the way God would want him to. All right? So Potiphar understood some things. Now, Joseph's working for Potiphar. So Potiphar's looking at Joseph going, as long as Joseph is prospering, I'm going to prosper. You know, he's working for me. If he prospers, if God blesses him, my household gets blessed. How many times do you see a household where you've got maybe a saved wife and a lost husband, or a saved husband and a lost wife, or whatever the case may be, but the whole home stays blessed, that God just blesses it to no end? And it's because of that saved individual. It's not because of the lost individual. It's because of the saved individual and them being faithful to their situation, being faithful to where God has placed them. And I think we see that all the time. You know, we see families that are so blessed because of that. We see, I believe our nation is blessed still. And I think it's blessed because of us. What makes our nation any better than the other nation? But yet, you know, our nation is blessed. I do believe it's because of you and I. God blesses the nation because he's blessing us. And as he blesses us, the nation is naturally blessed. You know, I know I throw this little scenario out there. I've thrown it out before, but I just like to hammer it every chance I get. But if God decides to give the church, say the church needs finances, and God decides, I'm going to give the church finances, does he just drop it out of heaven? Of course not. You know what he does? He gives it to the people that are faithful to tithe. I mean, he's not going to give it to somebody that's not faithful to tithe. because they're not going to put the share into the church that God wants to be in the church. So he blesses the person who's faithful to tithe so that that individual will then tithe the amount. So if the church needed X number of dollars, you know, he's going to make sure he blesses them with enough so that they will give X number of dollars. That's the way God works. And we see that over and over again, by the way, in Scripture, where God blesses those who he knows is going to be faithful with those things. To the guy that has the 10 talents, you know, he got the greater blessings because he was faithful with what he had. The one that just hid it in the sand, he didn't give him nothing, he took it away from him. We need to understand if we're faithful with what God has given us, then God may very well use us to prosper those people around us. So Potiphar's no dummy. He's looking around, he's going, man, God is blessing everything that Joseph does, and if he's going to bless everything Joseph does, if I put him as head of my household, that means everything in my household is going to be blessed. If he's in charge of my finances will be blessed. If he's in charge of all the servants, my servants will be blessed. If he's in charge of my fields will be blessed. I want him in charge of everything because God's obviously blessing him and making him prosperous. Now, keep this in mind. When we're talking about prosperity here, we're not talking about Joseph wasn't making money. He was prosperous in the sense that everything he had that Midas touch, if you would. Everything that he touched, everything he did, God blessed it, made it work, made it happen, made it do something, you know. There's been people in my life that I've known that, and still know, that if I've got a particular prayer request, I've never been one that really shares it with just everybody. I'm just more private. I'm just that way. I don't know if that's good or bad. It just is what it is. But I will tell you this. I have a handful of people in my life that I believe to be incredible prayer warriors. They're just people that I've watched their life, and I've watched what happens when they pray, and I've kind of made middle notes. When I need prayer, here's the people I'm talking to. Because God is, I mean, they've got a hotline to God, and there's just no getting around it. And I see that and know that. I want to watch for them. And so when I have a special need, man, who do you think I'm going to? You know, I'm going to that one that's got the little red phone sitting on their desk. It's just direct line to God kind of thing. You know, I'm going to them. Well, that's Joseph. So Potiphar is smart enough to realize, here's the guy I want to stay in touch with. Here's the guy I want to deal with. It's kind of funny because I must have been on that list for some people. We used to have a couple here. They're both dead now. The Joneses, Bert and Bernice Jones. And they just lived right up the street here. And every time they would go to the hospital for anything, it didn't matter what it was, they'd call me and want me to just pray with them. You know, if it just meant pray with them on the phone or come over to their house or go to the hospital, it didn't matter what it was, they wanted me to pray with them. And the reason they do that is because of one incident. Went there on occasion, and the doctor, she would be her granddaughter, Suzanne, granddaughter. The line was, she had a PICC line, and they couldn't get the blood to flow in, which is not a big deal. They can just take it out of the arm. But I'm just saying, and that happens apparently quite often, you know, because it gets a little blood flap on the inside and it doesn't work. And they were just going to try to draw blood out of that. And she had tough veins, and it would have been easier for them if they could. And they said, well, I don't think we're going to be able to get it. We'll just have to get it out of her arm. And she's like, oh, you know, that's so painful because my veins roll. They can't find them. They're little and old and all this. It was so funny. They said, well, wait a minute. Before you do that, let the pastor pray for her and then try it again. I'm like, seriously. I'm not a faith healer. All right. This is that. Now, you know, talking about pressure, you know. And then, well, we'll try anything. I'm like, seriously? All right. So I prayed for her and the blood flowed. Coincidence. But from then on, I was their prayer guy. From then on. I was their prayer guy. And man, if anything wasn't going to happen, they thought, if it don't happen when he prays, it ain't going to happen. And there are people in my life that, in all honesty, I feel that way. It's like when I say pray for me and they say okay, I actually kind of walk away feeling like it's fixed. Because that's how much confidence I have in their prayer life. And I think that's what Joseph was to Potiphar. Potiphar looked at Joseph and thought, man, if anybody's going to prosper in the Lord, it's going to be this guy. Because he's been through a bunch. He's a slave. And yet, he works hard. He's faithful to do everything he's told to do. And God's blessing him like crazy. That's Joseph. And so that's the situation that we have here. And that's where we are in the life of Joseph with Potiphar. And we're not going to get into anything else beyond that because we won't have time to finish it. And I don't want to start it and finish it. It's too good of stuff. Any questions about any of that? That actually brings us all the way down to about verse 7, okay? And then we'll pick up in verse 7 next week. But is there anything, any questions you have with any of those things from verses 1 through 7 in chapter 39? Yeah, Raj. Potiphar. That don't ring a bell to me, no. That's the only Potiphar I know. And quite frankly, Potiphar, I don't even know, and nobody really knows definitely, but I don't even know if that's a name or a title. So it's kind of a, you know. So there could be, so in all honesty, if it's a title, which it probably is, there's probably a bunch of Potiphars down the road. All right, this may have been the original for all I know, but my point being is it was probably more of a title for like the chief officer, you know, the guy that's in charge of everything, the guy that's a step under Pharaoh, you know, but that's who this guy is. So in all likelihood, it's more of a title than really even a name. Well, I don't know, but it wasn't Potiphar. Okay, well, it wasn't Potiphar. Potiphar was an Egyptian guy. All right. Okay. Are you thinking of Polycarp? Just hit me. Okay. You're thinking of Polycarp. Polycarp is beyond the New Testament. I mean, it's like after the New Testament. Yeah. We're like way back in Genesis. Yeah. We're thousands of years apart. All right. All right. Yes, sir. Yeah. Ishmaelites, yeah. They're Ishmael's folks. Ishmael's folks. Yeah, we talked about who the Midianites were. Yeah, and the Midianites were, I don't have my notes. I forget who they were. But the Midianites were also part of Abraham from Keturah. From one of Keturah's sons. Midian was one of Keturah's sons. Yeah. So both the Midianites and the Ishmaelites are actually from Abraham. Yeah.
Right, I know that.
Yeah.
I was just making sure that was
right. But that's who that is. The Ishmaelites were from Ishmael, and of course the Midianites were from Midian, both of which were sons of Abraham. Yeah. Well, you know, when you study that out, I mean, the Ishmaelites and the Israelites never got along. I mean, in fact, I mean, none of the offspring really of Abraham ever really got along with the Israelites. And part of that is this whole attitude even. I mean, you can even see that God had to curb some of Joseph's attitude. Now, Joseph was a man of God. I mean, Joseph was far different than all the other sons in that he actually seemed to have a real desire to serve God. And you don't see that much from the other ones. In fact, you know, we talked about all the wickedness that came from some of the other ones last week. But Joseph seems to really want and desire to do what God's called him to do. And to be quite frank with you, all the way from, if you want to talk about Isaac and Jacob and all of his sons, Joseph is the guy that really seems to be the closest to God. He's the one that really seems to walk closest to God. Jacob's the one that confuses me because you don't ever see him really walking close to God. You know, until the very end of his life, nearly, and it puzzles me sometimes. Like, God, what are you thinking? You know, but that's the way it went, and that's the way God chose and used. Yeah. Right. Any other quick things? I got like 1 minute.
Well,
kind of an emotional lesson tonight. I get that. But at the same time, that's what you get in Joseph. You get a lot of that with Joseph, because when we see somebody that really is walking close to God, you get a lot of those emotional lessons, a lot of those things where we just begin to see more than just like doctrine or more than theology, more than those things are all present. But sometimes we have to realize also, man, we've just got a close relationship with God, and he does great things for us and great things through us. And it's not about the prosperity doctrine you see in today's society. It's about just having a right fellowship and a right relationship with God. And I think that is so important. And in the case of Joseph, you know, the old cliche, you still see, and I might even use it in my sermon Sunday, I'm not quite sure if we get that far, but it's the old God doesn't always calm the storm. Sometimes he calms you in the midst of the storm, you know. And that's kind of where he is with Joseph in that. You know, he's still got a lot of things going to go on around him. We're going to see that next week. But he sure does take care of Joseph in the midst of it all. Joseph just doesn't realize it. All right. Thinks he's been forgotten. All right. Guys, thank you. And I know it was a short lesson tonight, but I think it was just one of those that I hope hit home with you. Those kind of really beat me up. Yeah, because I think I'm one of those that I sometimes forget, you know, and I get impatient and I get to thinking, God, where are you? And I forget, you know, I don't know what it is, but I get to thinking, God, I know you know what's going on. You know, I don't know why I get the idea you don't, you know, but I guess we all fall into that trap sometimes. Stand up and we'll be dismissed. Dear Father, Lord,